and welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and my snack of the episode is a can of ginger ale.
I'm Matthew Gatos, and my snack of the episode is a slice of cherry pie.
My name is Bonnie Nis, and my snack of the episode is an oven pizza and a cider.
And I'm Sari Riley, and my snack of the episode are the little Cinnabon bites from Taco Bell. Hashtag not spawn.
This week, we are talking about 1998's Brink, and Matt is going to tell us where this cast is now.
And it's not quite as sad as last time.
So
first we have Andy Brink Brinker, played by Eric Von Detten. He's the teen heartthrob we all know and love. He was in The Princess Diaries and did a bunch of TV things. I think more interestingly, he was the voice of Sid in the first three Toy Story films.
What?
Now he just seems to be a dad and a husband, and he does local community theater for fun in his spare time.
Wait, Sari, I have to ask, do you know The Princess Diaries?
I have heard the name, but I have not watched it, so okay. I know that it exists.
Okay. You, like, really, like, did not touch Disney at
no.
all. Like, did not fuck with Disney, even
all
a little bit.
Cartoon Network, all Nickelodeon. Disney movies sometimes, so, like, I know Toy Story. I've seen that with my eyeballs and heard it with my ears. But yes, nothing live action.
I feel like The Princess Diaries was one that I feel like everyone just saw at some point in their lives.
Yes. My mind is blown to know that it was an option to not see The Princess Diaries.
17 million times, which is right. About how many times I've seen
yes,
it.
Same.
I've definitely seen like pictures from this. I just Googled it and I was like, I've seen GIFs of like Anne Hathaway doing her transformation sequence from it.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the rest of the Brinker family, we've got his little sister Katie, played by Katie Volding. She did some other acting, including the other DCOM Smart House that we'll get to later, but is now seemingly listed as a former actor everywhere I could see, and she doesn't seem to have any public-facing things happening, so I don't really know what she's up to these days.
She's probably living a happy life.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to hope and just assume that she's off living in...
She probably wants it that way, so...
Yeah, that's the people on this list who aren't very public. I'm assuming they made that choice.
Yep.
We have Maddie Brinker, who is the mom, played by Robin Riker, who's a soap opera actress these days on many, many, many episodes of Days of Our Lives and The Bold and the Beautiful, and most recently played a granny in a film called Psycho Granny. So.
Oh, that took a twist.
I wonder what that one's about.
Yeah. Yeah. Sari, have any theories about that plot?
That's the plot.
I don't like it. Sounds like a murder
Accurate.
Mystery movie or something.
Yeah, it looked like a very cheesy horror movie from the picture I saw.
Mm.
And then our one bit of sad news this week is that Ralph Brinker, the dad, is played by David Graff, who unfortunately passed away in 2001, but he's fantastic in this and well known for being in like the Police Academy movies and being a guest star on pretty much every single TV show that ever existed in the 90s, if you look him up. Moving on to some of the other skaters that we have in this movie, we've got Team X-Blade's leader Val, played by Sam Horrigan, who I knew as a kid from being in the movie Little Giants, which was one of my favorites. I don't know if anyone else on this podcast has seen that.
Yes.
Nope.
As you would expect.
Yeah,
I know
the trend continues.
This is very strong for anything we can talk about on this podcast. I didn't realize how strong, but
the brand.
But he was also on the TV show Grace Under Fire, and more recently, /10 years ago, he was on a reality TV show called Beauty and the Geek, where he was one of the beauties.
What?
Yeah. Ooh.
Wild.
Yeah, he was very Jersey Shore tanned and tatted up. And yeah, more recently, he's been in some extremely upsetting legal troubles that I'm not going to get into. So moving on, Gabriella, who is one of Brink's friends in this movie, is played by Christina Vidal. And you might also know her from being the singer in the band Pink Slip in the movie Freaky Friday with Lindsay Lohan.
Yes.
But she's still acting consistently on TV. She's like a series regular on the TV shows Training Day and Sneaky Pete, and has a sitcom coming up on ABC called United We Fall. So she's still out there doing it. Two people that aren't doing quite as much. We have Jordy, played by Asher Gold in this movie. The internet doesn't seem to know what happened to Jordy or Asher Gold. He doesn't seem to exist anymore. So maybe he's off living a great private life as well.
The way that you said this compared to Katie, which I think the sister's name is, sounds like he was in witness protection or something like that. Like, there's no trace of him. I Googled the actor's name and he's gone. He's not even wiped. An IMDb page.
I mean, to be fair, that's kind of what it looks like on the internet. Is like he did a couple other things after Brink, including being like an extra in the movie Accepted with Justin Long. But other than that, he doesn't really show up anywhere. He doesn't have any sort of like, where are they now, before and after kind of pictures out there in the world. So, yeah, Asher Gold, if you're out there, hit me up.
Or no, he's in witness protection.
Oh, right. John Smith, if you're out there, hit me up.
Everyone else,
John Smith.
Forget that you heard us talking about him. This portion of the podcast to be deleted.
Asher Gold never existed.
Just like a robot voice over that part of the podcast.
Jordy redacted. Then rounding out three more skaters in this film, we had Boomer, who's from Team X-Blades, played by Walter Jones, who you might also know as the Black Power Ranger.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we had their good friend Peter in this, played by Patrick Levis, something like that. He was also in the Disney series So Weird, and more recently, he had a Christian rock album come out in 2013 and is on the Nick Jr. show, The Fresh Beat Band.
Okay, two things. First of all, I love So Weird. Eric Von Detten was also on that show, so very exciting, all the So Weird kids. But more importantly, the Black Power Ranger was like 30 I stopped to look him up because I was like, wait, the timeline feels off in my head because of when I was watching the Power Rangers versus when this movie came out. So anyway, I don't know, like Eric Von Detten was an actual child skating against like the opposing team is like grown men. So
I didn't even think about that, of like the years between Power Rangers and Brink is substantial enough. And Walter Jones was not like an actual teenager when he was playing a teenager on Power Rangers either. So yeah. Huh.
Wait, what was the name of the Christian rock band?
Actually, it was a self-titled like album that he put out. So you can just look up Patrick Levis. I think the album is called Extravagant God.
Mario was excited because that this was going to be her in her wheelhouse of knowledge.
I know. I was waiting for it. Like, if you had been like, oh, you know that classic Christian screamo, I would have been like, yes, I do know.
I personally did not dive any deeper, simply because my lack of Christian rock ends at Jars of Clay. So I don't think he was in Jars of Clay. But the last two here, I think I said three earlier and I was wrong. The last two are BJ, who is the strong silent type in this movie, played by Jacob Elliott. It's the only thing he ever acted in, and apparently now has a real estate photography business. So I don't know how he ended up in Brink, but I'd be very interested to know because it's literally the only thing he's ever done. And then, lastly, we have Arnie. I don't remember what his name was in this movie, but he's played by Joey Cimarron, who is also in Little Giants, and he's in Clockstoppers, but all stop acting to become the vice president of MDDN, a music management company started by the Madden brothers from Good Charlotte.
What?
And he seems, he's a music manager now and seems to be like heavily tied to managing Poppy.
Oh, weird.
YouTuber/musician. So I have this theory that he was probably at VidCon since Poppy was at VidCon. And maybe we were in the same room as Arn.
Oh, man. We could have pulled him aside.
Be like, hey,
you want that inside knowledge?
Yeah,
I'm sure you want to talk about Brink some more.
Yes, we just need one sound bite.
I have burning professional questions for you. No, it's not about your career as a music manager.
Yeah, it's not about Good Charlotte. It's not about Poppy. It's about Brink.
The most important thing you ever did.
But that's where they are all now.
And now is the part of the podcast where we find out if Sari's guess from last week was, in fact, correct. I believe Sari said it was about a hot lifeguard. Mari, what is Brink actually about?
Not a hot lifeguard. I almost, gasped, like I kept it to myself when you started with skating.
Yes.
Even though you were on ice skating, yeah. I was like, oh, like she might get this. And then you just veered and you went to hot lifeguard.
I can't believe it. I'm so mad. I sent out an email to the three of you saying, as soon as I saw the cover, it was like, this is a skating movie. I should have gone with my first instinct. I'm never going to talk myself out of anything ever again. I'm going to go with the first dumb idea I have.
It was an all caps email about how personally attacked she felt by the poster.
How dare they make a skating movie?
Based probably entirely on your rationale. Like, Brink sounds like rink, sounds like skating. Mm. So this movie is indeed about skating, about Andy Brinker, who is known as Brink, and he really loves aggressive inline skating. He has three pals that also love aggressive inline skating, and they do it as a hobby totally for free, as many of us, namely the three of us, making a podcast about Disney movies for the fun of it.
We're soul casters.
We can totally relate.
That's the shirt for this episode.
These pals all go to high school with a group of skaters who are sponsored by X-Blades, so they get cool things like new gear and skates and also money. Team X-Blades hates Brink and his friends because, I don't know, competitiveness and, like, teenagers, I guess. I don't know. Brink's parents, namely his dad, just don't understand his love of skating and also how happy he is all the time, which is, like, a legit complaint his dad is. Like, that kid is just too happy! Which literally never happened to me growing up. But okay, Dad. Things get really rough when a series of pranks lead Brink and his pals to take on Team X-Blades in a race on school property. Like, all through the school and over, like, school property, and nobody notices at all. But unfortunately, one of the dudes on Team X-Blades, the Black Power Ranger, he gets badly hurt, and Brink stops the race to help him and call for help, but they all get busted, and they get suspended for the rest of the day, which also makes his dad super unhappy. This also leaves an opening on Team X-Blades for somebody to fill in for the Black Power Ranger. In the meantime, Brink and his pals would never, because they are soul skaters, aka skaters who skate for the fun of it, except Brink's dad has been out of work for 6 months because he got injured on the job. There are a lot of money worries at the Brinker home, so Brink decides that he's going to sell out and join Team X-Blades because they get paid $200 a week. I'm laughing, but I'm not really. I mean, if I got paid $200 a week to do this podcast, I would not be laughing.
Even if you had a manager that reminded you how much you sold out 24 hours a day.
Don't care.
Photo shoot.
Yeah.
Interview.
Send us $200 and new inline skates now.
Fuck soul casting. Brink briefly floats the idea of doing this, like, sponsored skating by his parents. His dad is all for him getting a job, but definitely not a skating job, $200 or not, because then Brink would think about skating all the time versus, like, now where it's, like, most of the time. Brink tries out for X-Blades anyway, and he gets on the team, and no one consults a parent at all, even though they're, like, paying this kid. It's cool. It's fine.
I really liked how the business deal was a handshake. No contract or anything. It was just, like, a very menacing handshake.
Like, up in his face, like, by his eyeballs. I don't understand why the handshake was, like, so high up, but there you go.
Yeah, no, that guy is stealing all of their money, for sure.
100%. Brink tries to hide the fact that he's on Team X-Blades from his friends, but doing double practices is wearing him out, and things get worse when his dad announces that he's found Brink a non-skating job at a dog groomer. So now he's got two practices, school and a job. He's running himself ragged and alienating his friends, who he keeps ditching to do other things. So the day of the invitational arrives, which is this, like, competition, like, halfway between the big competition, and Brink pretends to be sick. He tells the rest of his pals to go practice without him and definitely do not go to the invitational. Do not go there. Do not be there. Brink himself does go to the Invitational and helps Team X-Blades win. Unfortunately, the other Soul Skaters do show up and see that he's been lying to them this whole time. Friendship over. The douchey captain of Team X-Blades, who is Val, gloats, and so Brink quits Team X-Blades. Brink tries to talk to his friends again and repair their friendship and explain, but they are too mad and won't listen. Val, I don't know, stalks Brink and sees this happen and is like, I'll be your friend and still pay you $200 a week. And Brink is back on Team X-Blades. One day they are at the place where the downhill portion of the big competition is going to happen, and Brink's old pals show up, and for some reason they can't share this whole ass road, so they decide that they're going to race in order to see who gets to stay on the road. Brink really doesn't want to race Gabriella and tries to get her not to do it, but he also, like, does, I don't know, he still races, so they race, and Val is a cheatery cheater who cheats, and he throws some gravel on the road in front of Gabriella, who wipes out and badly hurts her arm. Brink goes to visit Gabby at home to see how she is and explains that he only sold them out for the money, and Gabby is all like, duh, we all need money. But that you can't stop doing something you love for money, because then you are a sellout. Like, that's the whole thing. Brink quits Team X-Blades again, very dramatically throwing his skates on a pizza and chocolate milkshake in Val's face. Brink also has a heart-to-heart with his dad, who tells him that skating is not who he is, it's what he does. Even if he never skates again, he's a good son and he's got good friends and he's still Andy Brinker. Brinker gets a pay advance at Pup and Suds to buy his friends new skates and shirts and buy back their love, which seems a little contrary to the message of this movie, but I get it. New skates are cool. So they all make up and decide to compete together. They compete in the big competition, and we get a lot of shots and montages of aggressive inline skating. They end up in the final downhill with Team X-Blades, so it's Brink against Val. Val cheats a lot during the downhill, including faking getting hurt because he knows that Brink always stops to help whoever is hurt, like he won't finish the race. But Brink still manages to like get up and get back in the race and win. And Brink and Team Pump and Suds and doing your hobbies for free wins in the end. Actually, no, it's taking out loans to do your hobbies wins in the end.
Wow.
And we end with him in like the classic champion pose of lifting up his trophy.
To the brink.
To the brink.
I forgot that I said that in last week's episode, and so I was like, did they actually say that in this? Like, is that what he shouted and I just zoned out? No. Past Sari thought that.
Okay, real quick, nostalgia check. Do you remember watching this as a kid? Matt?
Yes.
Mari?
Yes.
Me also yes. Sari?
Definitely no.
Okay, so what did we all think of this movie? Did you like it?
I mean, I loved it. I think this is one of the like quintessential DCOMs for me. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, no, I had a lot of fun.
Big same. This is definitely one of the, like, when I saw that this was third, I was very excited. When I saw the list that we were operating off of, my initial reaction was trepidation, because Under Wraps, You Lucky Dog were things that I didn't recognize. But then I saw that Brink was third and I was like, it's fine. This is going to be great. And it was everything that my heart remembered. It made me every bit as happy, I feel, as it did as a, you know, 10-year-old.
I also really enjoyed it. I watched this a ton growing up, so there was definitely that to like build off of. But even with like all of the like do what you love like messaging, I thought it was really sweet. And I thought, I don't know, I laughed. I expected it to be more dated because I remember Brink like would talk in a way that his dad was always like, "What are you saying?" But he even calls his family. He's like, "Bye, fam." I'm like, "Dude, we're still saying
yeah.
that."
Yeah,
like we like
timeless.
I know. It is timeless. It did not make me feel as old as I expected, and I did like enjoy myself while watching this movie.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun too. I had no idea what to expect, as is the case with all of these movies, but it was just so much fun. And if I had watched it as a kid, I would have definitely begged my parents to get me inline skates. Probably not so I could do tricks like that, but just so I could go down the street and feel cool.
Because remember, Sari was a nervous child.
Yeah. Wouldn't want to do the jumps, wouldn't want to do the flips off of the walls, but just like skating down the street, going somewhere, feeling cool. Yeah, this is definitely my favorite. I say definitely as in we've watched three movies of the three that we've watched so far. So,
but this is definitely the best of the three. This feels objectively true that this movie is the best of the three that we've watched.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah, rollerblading was so cool in the like mid to late 90s. Like I had so many flashbacks while watching this to like the opening scene of Mighty Ducks 2 is a whole rollerblading sequence. The opening sequence of the Power Rangers movie, which is a few years before this, is a lot of rollerblading. Like, mm-hmm. rollerblading was just the cool thing for teens to do in movies back then.
I also had this thought when they were talking about like the sponsorship of like these kids skating and how many millions of dollars this dude was making off of like the promotion. And I was like, really? But yes, no, rollerblading back then, I guess, was like making tons of money to the point where you needed like a sponsored team. So remembering through that where I was like, where's all this money coming from? And then being like, oh yeah, 90s.
Yeah, the X Games was only like 3 years old at this point. So we were like in the peak of this sort of like extreme sports movement happening.
Mm-hmm. What are the X Games? I'm sorry if this is a dumb question.
Where do we begin? This is, basically, it was a sort of Olympics for skateboarding, rollerblading, that sort of thing, that like those cool up and coming activities that were not allowed in the regular Olympics.
The X is for extreme, so extreme
it always
sports.
Is
got it. I see. X Blades, X Extreme. I get it.
Yeah, you got X Blades, which has the X and the Z with no E.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just X-Blads.
Look, if the X-Blads want to give me $200 a week to do my hobbies.
But I enjoyed like flashing back to my days of like rollerblading with my friends. And also there's this soundtrack is so much better than the last two.
Yes.
There's the credits song aside, which is very, very bad in every way that music could be bad. Throughout, there are a ton of good like ska and punk songs that make me feel like I'm also playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. So this is very of an era, but it's an era that I look back on fondly.
Yes.
All the stunts just felt very fun. And I feel like the way that I consume media is that I don't pay as close attention as I should to things like music or lighting, or like the details that went into filmmaking. But every time they did a montage of skate tricks, I was like, yeah, this is great. And the music was definitely part of that.
I very early on was trying to play spot the stunt double to see if I could, because I like there were times where it was mostly on close-ups. So it was clearly Eric Von Detten like going by. And I was trying to decide, like, is he on skates? Is he really doing that? Do they got him on some sort of, like, other wheeled contraption while they're doing this, like, close-up? But then I stopped because then I was just having fun.
I also just like the fact that this kid's defining character trait is being happy. I mean, for context, I am in the middle of rewatching all of The Americans for Snark Squad Pod. And so taking a break from watching this really intense and stressful spy show to watch this incredibly happy child inline skating was a gift.
All the characters were so fun and so good. I loved Gabby. She was great. I want her to be my best friend. If I watched this movie as a kid, I would want to be here probably, because I was very into the I'm a tomboy too, as someone who played video games and Pokemon cards and things like that. So not as cool as her because she did sport, but would have definitely, like, when she showed up to school in a dress and was like, my mom made me wear it because she said on the first day of school, you got to dress nice. I was like, I feel that in my soul, where all I wanted to do was wear graphic t-shirts and baggy jeans. but not skater aesthetic, just because it was more comfy. I don't know.
I was also like you said about looking for the stunt doubles, Mari, of like, I was surprised at how often I saw that it wasn't a stunt double.
Right.
Especially during the end. Like, Val is doing some really cool tricks at the end. And as far as I could tell, he was doing all of them himself. So I don't know what sort of training they went through before this, or if they intentionally cast teens who could skate. But I bought that it wasn't a stunt double for the majority of the time.
Well, yeah, skating was all the rage in the 90s, so all the teens.
Everyone did it.
Everyone did it.
I have a question for you guys. What was your reaction in the moment to the worm sandwich scene?
Visceral displeasure.
It was a very quick 1-2 of, like, watching him bite into the worms and being grossed out. But then that point where they lift up the signs that say, don't be a wuss or whatnot, I was laughing again. So I think the movie did a good job of distracting me from the moment that he points at the worms and he's like, you know, formulating the plan silently. Like, I was already cringing. I was like, uh-huh, oh no.
I don't wanna.
Yeah, but they won me back quickly.
Much like the rest of this movie, I loved it. It was just so what a good weird prank to play. That would only, I don't know, kids in my school weren't that wild, but sure, let's steal some worms and shove them in a kid's sandwich. Oh, what a good goof.
I like that, you know, I don't know why I want to mention this here, but I was just thinking about that scene and the fact that Val, the actor, does like 87% of his acting with his pouty lips. So I just keep remembering his like pouty lip face every time he was like, ugh, like upset that they did something. But yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned his pouty lips.
His pouty lips and his luscious locks.
Yes. Beautiful hair.
Accentuated by that earthworm just hanging right out. We gotta recreate it for the listeners of the podcast who haven't experienced this along with us.
I'm sure they all thank you for that, Sarah.
Yes, you're welcome for my great guesses and my knowing nothing and my earthworm appreciation.
So, inspired by Brink and his love of soul skating, this week, we are talking about our own after-school activities. Matt, what did you do after you got home from a long day of being at school?
Oh, so many things. I was like, when we talked about this in the email a little bit, I was like trying to think of everything I did as a kid. And I got tired, like just thinking of all of the things that I used to do. I did basketball, football, little league, guitar lessons, karate, like you name stereotypical 90s kid activities. And I probably was doing that.
Did you get good at any or all of them?
I would say I got decent at guitar. I technically am a black belt in karate, but I stopped doing karate when I was like 9.
Matt, this is wild. I did not know this about you.
You peaked early. That's a very good fun fact.
Yeah, but it was not. Like, clearly, if I was able to get a black belt by age 9 and then retire from karate forever, it probably wasn't, like, the best karate.
Matt, I know nothing about karate, but you just said black belt. So, I don't know. It sounds impressive to me.
Yes. As far as we know, you're a child prodigy and you could beat us all up right now.
Yes.
I could definitely break the desk that I'm sitting at in half with one little wave of my hand. Mm-hmm. Just splinters everywhere.
Yeah, you learned it as a kid and you never forget that.
Yeah.
It's like riding a bike, being a black belt. Right. That's what I heard.
Yeah. So, I don't think I got good at karate, but technically, like, by the book, I guess I got the best at karate. But as far as sports go, no, because I was very mediocre at all sports and I played them for like a very small amount of time. Like, I'd do like 1 year of football and be like, that was fine. I'll do something else. And then I did wrestling in junior high. I did track in junior high. Mm-hmm. But then once high school came around, I decided to get into more of the music and theater stuff. So then I sort of abandoned all sports and joined show choir and did the plays and all that jazz. Again, I don't know where, like, Where was that time coming from? I try to think about doing any one of those things
right?
now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I guess when you get out of school at like 3 o'clock, you got some extra hours in
yeah,
your day.
You got some. Yeah. I often think about the fact that I had to start school like at 7 o'clock in the morning. Like high school, mm-hmm. we started at 7:25.
Yikes.
Granted, I was waking up at 7 and literally rolling uh-huh. into school.
Uh-huh.
But
yes.
Also, that seems awfully early yes. to me now.
Yes. Well, what things were you doing after school then?
So I am going to paint you a little picture first. And that picture is that I am a first generation American. And so my parents are counterculturalists, I would say, I guess, not like purposefully so, but because they are immigrants to this country. And also, I grew up in a very conservative household, which I've mentioned before. So this really created an atmosphere of like, go to school and come back home and that's the end. And however, I guess my saving grace was that I'm the second child. I'm the middle child. So my older sister, like you asked her this question, she's like, I literally never did anything ever. But by the time that I was going through school, I was, you know, figuring things out a little bit more. So like elementary and middle school, I was doing as much as I could while still, like, I couldn't really stay after school oftentimes, or if I had to stay after school, I was like fudging it. So I clearly remember being a safety patrol. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And so you had to like stay after school, like, I guess like 25 minutes or 30 minutes to like patrol the halls and like help, I don't know, keep control. And I would stay like 10 and like book it and just be really late to my dad picking me up or things like that, like trying to piece this all together. But then I like started excelling academically. So my parents let me do a little bit more. And so I was doing lots of really nerdy things like science fairs and speech and debate club. And then in high school, I started doing musical theater. So it was a really weird transition. Our gifted program in middle school was like totally not legit. And the same teacher who was running the gifted program was the person who did the musical theater stuff. So we had 2 hour like block with him and he was like, all right, everyone, we're doing musical theater. And so my gifted class turned into musical theater class. And
that sounds like a DCOM waiting to happen.
I know. Thankfully, I loved it. And I did that all through middle school and high school.
So don't spoil the plot of high school musical. For Sari.
Right.
Now I'm just going to describe Mari's life as the plot.
Yes. She's a first generation American.
Just really gifted at school. Was in it for the smarts, but then everything turned upside down.
Save that. Roll it back later.
Sari, what did you do after school?
I feel like I'm less interesting. Well, okay, here's the thing. The way that my dad parented, he was very controlled as a kid, I think. I think that's fair to say. He also listens to the podcast that I'm on, so he'll hear me saying that. But he was in daycares a lot, after school cares, had activities very structured. And so I think when going into parenting me and my brother, he wanted us to have a lot of choice into what we were doing. But the problem is that I didn't like other kids because I was scared of them. And so I didn't like doing a lot of organized activities. I did gymnastics when I was really little until third grade. And I got good, not the best, like Matt at karate, but very good at gymnastics and was invited to be on a gymnastics team and like go to competitions and train up and things like that. And my dad asked if I wanted to do it or not. And I was like, no, the girls seem scary. They're older than me and I don't want to. But I was really good. I was so flexible. I could bounce so high. I could do flips. That other Sari, parallel universe, is a gymnast. She's doing great. She's so strong, she got a scholarship to college, probably. and then I didn't really do much else. My brother signed up for Aikido, so it's a different martial art, and so I did that for a little bit. I also tried a couple instruments. I think I played guitar and piano. But again, I played piano to the extent of I had one computer CD that taught me the lessons from, I don't know, like a very basic song to The Entertainer. And then once I learned The Entertainer, I was out of piano songs, so I quit piano because I didn't want to go to a lesson with a real person. That would be nonsense. And then I don't really know what I did in middle school. I just went home and played video games or read books. And then in high school, my friends started roping me into doing after school activities. So I did theater too. I got a bunch of theater kids in media. Wow.
Oh, wow. Imagine that. Theater Shock. Kids grow up and make a podcast. Uh-huh.
It's the only skill we have. Yeah.
Talking about ourselves. But the thing is I was not, I guess this even more podcast-like. I didn't act in any of the plays. I did sets and lights, and I was very much tech for all the shows. Mm-hmm. And then I also focused a lot on academics. So I was in different national honor societies, like science and art and normal, that had volunteering. But I didn't really structure my after-school activities very closely. It was just like I followed my friends around. And so they were going camping one weekend and they said you had to be a part of Science National Honor Society to do that. And so I joined so that I could go camping with my friends. And same thing with art. And then, I don't know, very, very unfocused. Very unfocused parenting, very unfocused after school activities.
My after school activities were also very unfocused, probably a little bit more like Matt's, though, in that it was just everything. I feel like I took one lesson in all sorts of things, but like just nothing ever really stuck. My mom was really big. I don't know if this is just like a deeply Midwestern parent thing, but my mom was very big on us needing to have activities. Like she wasn't very, we didn't have much in the way of rules and she didn't really care about follow through. It was just like, you have to, you can't just come home and do nothing. Like you have to have some sort of activity. Something in your life that you care about that isn't school. And I don't care how often you change what that thing is, but you should have other things. Especially I was homeschooled for a few years in the time from like seventh through ninth grade. And so that in that period in particular, she was very big on it because otherwise I was literally just at home all the time. But even before that, like when I was a kid, she just, you know, I don't know, we had to have activities. So a lot of very stereotypical like little girl stuff. I took a bunch of different dance classes. Probably most of my childhood, I was in a handful of dance classes. I also did community theater as a kid for a lot of years. So you know,
so
here we
the,
all are.
The finale of Cooler Than Homework will be a live stage performance of an original play put on by the four of us.
Mm-hmm. I have a random aside about my community theater days, which is that one of the kids who was in the theater was friends with Eric Von Detten, and so Eric Von Detten was like, I don't know, made a cameo in our like community theater. I saw him backstage is the extent of this. Didn't actually interact with him at all, but he was there. I shared a stage very briefly with Eric Von Detten as a small child doing community theater.
This episode really has come full circle.
Yes.
Like
I did kind of like the degree to which Team Haunt Earth had like very cerebral and nerdy after school activities, and Team Haunt Space was like, I don't know, man, I did everything. I continue to look for more Haunt Earth Haunt Space parallels. Mm-hmm. As the podcast continues.
I think we'll eventually have a quiz you can take that will sort you whether you are Team Haunt Space or Team Haunt Earth.
Uh-huh. I don't know which one you want to haunt in the afterlife.
How are your after school activities?
Now it's time to talk about the lessons that we learned from Brink. Matt.
Talk to people. Just, you know, anyone, everyone in your life. Use words. Be open and honest. Whether it's your family, your friends, your dog washing, like, I guess, employer, anything. Just use your words. So many problems are solved and you'll feel better.
I'm going with the obvious one because I learned that if you take money for doing a thing that you love, you are a big sellout, and you will be quickly unhappy. You might also become a cheater. So there's very little or no path to success if you get paid for doing the thing you love.
I learned that baking a cake is a lot like friendship. Because that was such a great line in Home Ec. And yeah, I don't know. In the movie, I wrote this down because I thought it was cute. And little Sari would have definitely taken this to heart as like, oh, that's how you make friends. where in the movie they said, sometimes it doesn't turn out the way you expect, but it still tastes sweet. But I'd like to extend that metaphor and say, sometimes you just throw in all the wrong ingredients and you mess it up and then you don't have a cake. Because sometimes that's how friendship works. That's adult series perspective on this child movie.
I learned a very important lesson about leaning on your friends for support. And Sari has another lesson that she learned. So I'm going to hand it back to Sari to share the other lesson that she learned. I'm going to lean on my friend for support.
Nicely done.
Yeah, good. My other lesson is do Mario Kart shortcuts and you'll win. Because that's all he had to do. He just went off of a random ramp and then came in first. Wow.
Beautiful. And now, to end this episode of Cooler Than Homework, it is time for Sari, who knows nothing except for the title of the next movie, to guess the plot of the next movie. So, Sari, what do you think the plot is for Halloween Town?
Okay. Imagine a town where it's Halloween every single day. Not like Nightmare Before Christmas, where everyone's like spooky and undead.
Are you just going to do the plot to Nightmare Before Christmas?
Yeah.
Not like that.
But unlike that, even though very similar premise, it's just one where there are adults, there are kids trick-or-treating, every day is Halloween. This is how you operate socially. You knock on your neighbor's doors, you get candy. This is the exchange. You do not eat your own food. I went a little bit far with that one. That one's going to be missed, but I'm going to keep going forward. There are, as part of this, so there are trick-or-treaters, but there are also people. So there are trickers and there are treaters. And these are the factions in this world. Treaters, very sweet, celebrate the good parts of Halloween. The costumes, the festivities, the candy. The trickers are the monsters in this universe. They are trying to cause mischief. They are mayhem. And it's a Disney movie, so it could be some magic involved. Maybe they curse other people. Maybe there's magic involved. But there's one tricker who just wants to be good. She just loves candy. That's it. She's sweet. And her whole family is trying to get her to cause mischief on her 12th birthday, the Halloween day. No, the 13th. Definitely a 13th birthday, because that is a tricky number. To cause her first mischief and become a true adult. But she's like, what if I just want to give out candy? What if I just want to make friends? And so, like a forbidden friendship, she crosses over, learns the way of the treaters. And then there's some, how does this end? I think she grows and shows the trickers that they don't have to be mean all the time. And that they can alter their community values to value treats, too. And so they still cause some mischief, because that's deep in their souls. But they learned to cooperate on the one day of the year, October 31st, where everything is perfect. And then they're in chaos the rest of the year. The end. Halloween Town.
Wow. That is amazing for several reasons.
I'm delighted for you to watch Halloween Town for the first time with that, you know, just like living in the back of your brain. Mm-hmm. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Now it's more ominous after knowing how close and how far I was and Brink simultaneously. This is all so cryptic, all your feedback.
Yes.
I mean, you are similarly very close and very far at the same time.
Yes.
There are some details that I was like, what did she? She saw this movie, but.
And then you would, the next word out of your mouth would be
yeah.
wildly far off.
It's all real, folks.
Well, thank you all for joining us and listening to another episode of Cooler Than Homework. If you want to help us sell out, you can do that.
Soulcasters.
I'm team X-Pods.
For real though, you can support the show. If you go to snarksquad.com/ghostwars, we are doing a limited campaign of Haunt Earth and Haunt Space shirts. After this episode goes up, there's only one more week left in the campaign, and we are raising money to help pay for our hosting fees, and also you can look real cool and support the show, and we would love that. Again, you can find out more information at snarksquad.com/ghostwars. We would love to hear all of your thoughts about this podcast and about Brink. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up at snarksquad.com, or you can find us all on Twitter. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Marines.
And I am at C.E. Riley.
Thank you to Stefan Chin for the wonderful theme music that is playing us out right now, and we will see you all again next time.
Soulcasters for life.